specific, spruce-specific fungus, which is super rare, growing in Scotland is just weird. And how it got here, I have no idea.
Welcome to our latest Hutton Highlights podcast. I'm Elaine Maslin, Media Officer here at the James Hutton Institute. Through our podcast, we bring you a glimpse into our world-leading research across food, energy and environmental security. Today we're talking truffles and a rather exciting super rare truffle discovery recently made here in Scotland. It's a first for Scotland and it's raising some interesting questions, particularly for those restoring what are known as plantations on ancient woodland sites, or PAWS for short. To find out more, I'm joined by native woodland ecologist Richard Thompson from Forestry and Land Scotland and Dr. Andy Taylor, a molecular fungal ecologist here at the Hutton. I'll start with Andy. Can you tell us a bit more about this discovery?
Yeah, we discovered this amazing find in Glen Creeran across on the west coast, and it's part of an ongoing project that we're doing in restoration of woodlands, and we found it associated with spruce in these ancient woodlands. So it's very odd, and it's very rare indeed, this thing. It's only on about 120 sites over the whole of Europe, and it grows specifically with spruce, which makes it very interesting since spruce is not a native to the UK. And it's, like I said, it's very rare. It's mainly known from Scandinavia and from the Alps. And it's a very odd thing. And you said it wasn't edible, but it certainly is edible because truffles are the fruit bodies of fungi that grow below ground. And when they mature, they smell, they're dug up by animals, and the animals eat them. And then that's how the spores are spread, because the truffle is basically a fruiting body containing the spores.
And this thing hasn't been seen in Scotland before. Has it been in the UK before at all?
Yeah, it was found for the first time in 2016 in North Wales by someone who knew the area really well and thought, I know this truffle and this area should be very good for it. So they went out and they actually found it, which is amazing. And it's under very wet conditions under Sitka spruce in North Wales. But this is the first time it's been found in Scotland.
And is there anything unique about it? So how would we know if it's that particular truffle?
Yeah, it's quite a weird thing. It belongs to the group that's probably more familiar to people with the boletes, the penny buns that we eat. But this is in that group, but it's actually a truffle. It's just a round marble thing and it's white. But when it's damaged, it goes blue. So it's a very, very distinct thing. And it's very odd indeed.
And how big are these things? So you say like marble-like, so what's the sort of sizes you expect?
Oh, it's a big marble. It's about 3 or 4 centimetres across. That would be a big one. So they're usually 2 to 3 centimetres. But like I said, it's the fruit body as a fungus, and that fungus is actually growing on the roots of Sitka. So it's one of these essential symbiont fungi that helps the Sitka grow.
Oh, interesting. So, Richard, it was you that asked Andy to do the work that led to the discovery of this truffle. Could you explain why he was rooting around in Glen Creeran in the first place, finding these things?
Hi, Elaine. Yeah. We are doing a lot of PAWS restoration across Scotland, and a lot of it is on the west coast, where there were formerly rainforests, and we're trying to restore these areas back to rainforests. And we're particularly keen to know how our restoration techniques are working. Ideally, we would very gradually remove the trees, the non-native trees that were planted in the mid-20th century. We would remove them very gradually so that we could maintain the woodland conditions and the particularly sensitive features within these ancient woodlands that have survived the phase of conifer planting would survive more, we think, more efficiently, if you like, through gradual removal of the non-native trees. However, most of these sites are in quite challenging terrain, steep-sided hills. Quite often they're very remote, and it's very difficult to get in and manage them on a regular basis. And the normal way we approach the restoration of these planted ancient woodland sites is to clear fell them. So that's not ideal at all. We would much prefer to be following a gradual approach if we could. So this clear felling has got question marks as to whether it is an efficient way to restore these rainforest habitats. So we were very, very keen that James Hutton Institute should work with us to have a look to see what biodiversity is developing as these woodlands go from domination by spruce, but back through to native woodland. And in Glen Creeran, we're fortunate that we have got a long period of restoration, as about 30 years of restoration taken place there. And so we have a sequence of different phases of progression from conifer dominated through to now thriving native woodland, young native woodland. And we also have the ancient semi-natural woodland as the original type that we can assess, or Andy and colleagues can assess the biodiversity in those to compare with how well the restoration is taking place in the planted ancient woodland areas.
Yep, so a lot of work over a long period of time. Could you maybe give us a bit of the history? So these pause sites that you mentioned, that's planting on woodland sites, why did they come about in the 20s? What's the background for them?
Well, Forestry Commission was formed in 1919 in response to a huge shortage of timber. And so there was the need to develop a strategic reserve of timber and in case of other wars and generally for domestic use. And so the whole forest industry arose in the 20th century. The native woodlands, the ancient woodlands, were considered to be unproductive and they were planted with non-native trees at the time. It's not something we would do now. We know we can look back with the benefit of hindsight and know that that wasn't a great thing to do and there will have been biodiversity loss as a result of that. But nevertheless, that took place. And so we're in the process of trying to revert those areas back to native woodland. We've got about 28,000 hectares of that kind of woodland across Scotland. About 13,000 hectares of that are in the rainforest area.
And how important are these rainforests? I think there's different names for them, Atlantic rainforest, temperate rainforest, and they're recognised as kind of rainforest now. What's the importance of these to Scotland?
I understand that these habitats are of international importance. Certainly they're the European headquarters for a lot of species of bryophyte, that's moss and liverwort, and of lichen. And Andy and others are discovering they are important habitats for a lot of other species as well. They are tremendous places and akin to tropical rainforests.
Yeah, just carrying on from that, I mean, anybody who's walked in one of these woodlands, you get absolutely stunned by the luxuriant growth of the bryophytes, as Richard mentioned, the mosses are just festooning the trees. But a lot of the importance of which is given to these woodlands is based above ground, and we know incredibly little about the biodiversity below ground. And that's one of the things we're addressing in the projects that we're doing in conjunction with Richard, because, you know, there's enormous amounts of biodiversity in the soil, and we're only just getting to grips with this. And we know, you know, we know quite a bit from other woodlands, but in the case of the oak woods on the west coast, we have almost no information whatsoever. So that what we're doing at the moment is really unearthing all sorts of new and wonderful goodies from across there on the west.
Yeah, fantastic. So that brings us to this challenge that we've got and the project to restore these ancient woodlands, but among them is this rare fungi that only lives with the species that we're trying to remove. So before we get onto questions that raises in terms of restoration, do we know how this truffle actually got there in the first place?
No is a simple answer. And I was seriously surprised to find this because it is super rare. And I've done quite a bit of work with spruce in the past. And there are the particular group of fungi that I work on associate with the roots of the trees and they're essential to the growth of the trees. And all the trees that we have, native trees, have a special set of fungi associated with them. Whereas the spruce that's planted, you know, it's come in, it's been brought in as seed. So there's very few of the native fungi associated with it in Scotland. I think there's only two or three that I can think of. So to find this specific, spruce-specific fungus, which is super rare growing in Scotland, is just weird. And how it got here, I have no idea. because these truffles, they are spread essentially by animals digging them up, as I said, and they eat them, and then the spores are deposited somewhere else. So it's very unlikely it came in, you know, naturally. But since we brought in the spruce's seed, I really don't know where it's come from. So it's absolutely intriguing.
So it's a bit of an interesting challenge. And I guess the challenge also now is, well, what do we do about it? So what are the options?
Yeah, well, we're not too keen to retain the spruce on that site. Spruce pumps out a heck of a lot of seed, and it's not very tasty to the deer, so it tends to dominate if you leave any seed sources about. So ideally, we would be wanting to remove all the spruce from that site. So that can presents a little bit of a conundrum for us. And what I would be interested in seeing now is whether this species occurs elsewhere and whether this standing Glen Creeran is really, really special for it, which may make us think again. But if it occurs elsewhere, then maybe we can just crack on and restore the site as we'd originally planned to do. And maybe we could think about translocation if the this particular site is really, really important for it.
We might get an indication, actually, of how this thing might be distributed, because when it was originally found in Wales, the person who found it had read about it, knew the conditions under which it occurred, and went out and found it. So I think if you did the same up and down the west coast of mainland Britain, you could very easily find this. Well, sorry, you could possibly find this thing by just going and hunting for it in the conditions under which we know it grows. So I wouldn't be at all surprised if it's actually much more widespread, and that might ease things at Glen Creeran, because it does create a conundrum. You know, what do we do? Because this is globally rare,
and it's quite an interesting challenge, but. In the case when you found it, it wasn't a case of actually seeing a truffle. Can you explain how you found it and what's the method in the work that we've been doing?
Sure. We are actually very lucky in our work, because there are techniques now where we can take samples from the soil, extract the DNA from the soil, and then characterise the biodiversity in the soil using the DNA, because basically we can get sequences out of the DNA and then we can match those sequences with reference databases. And that's basically how we found this. I can extract the fungal DNA from these soils and then characterize the entire fungal community and get names for quite a few of them. And by quite a few of them, it's actually quite few. We end up with possibly 10 to 20% of these sequences with names. But that's how we found the truffle. It's a well-known truffle in the databases. So it was very clear that was the correct name for it.
Yeah, and to sort of be clear about that, you go in and you collect soil samples across these sites, and then these get brought back to a lab, and then there's a whole bunch of work done on them to do this sequencing.
Yeah, that's exactly what we do. So we go out, we take the soil samples, we bring them back, and then we process them through various steps, and we extract the DNA from the soil. And that's quite a laborious process. And then we send it off, and we have a company that we work with, and they sequence all of the organisms in the soil, and we get data from fungi, bacteria, worms, you name it. If it's in the soil, we can pick it up usually. And I mean, people might have heard of eDNA, so the E is for environmental, and it's becoming a very important tool for monitoring biodiversity, but it also gives you access to these amazing communities in the soil.
So how many soil samples did you take at Glen Creeran, and how many of them actually had signatures of this truffle in it?
Yeah, using the term signature for this this kind of thing is perfect, because basically what we're doing is looking for an indication that it's there. And we have 42 plots at Glen Creeran, and we collected multiple soil samples from within those plots. So we were trying to cover as much of the diversity as we could. And the signature of this truffle turned up in one plot out of the 42. And so that's quite rare at the site, but it's even crazier rare because we saw something like we had 4 million sequences from the site, and we found they out of those 4 million, only 3 of them could be associated with the truffle. And the name, by the way, is Chamanixia cispitosa. Chamanixia, because it was first discovered near Chamonix. So, obviously, mycologists have a great sense of humour.
And I guess that brings us on to where else in the world this truffle normally habits. So if it's not normally in the UK, where is its usual habitat?
Yeah, I think we mentioned earlier that it's usually in Scandinavia, well, not usually, it's found in Scandinavia, in spruce forests, and in the Alps in Europe. And that's its entire range in the world.
Yeah. Wow, so kind of limited. So it makes the mystery more intriguing. So we were talking about eDNA. This is a relatively new technique. And how has that helped our understanding of soil life and spotting things like fungi more broadly?
Yeah, eDNA is a tool which is used very extensively now. And it's not just for soil biodiversity. It's been used in all sorts of scenarios. For example, the great crested newt. There's a massive survey of newts in England. And basically, it's an amazing tool because you can just go to a pond, take a sample of the water, extract the DNA from the water and pick up the DNA of the great crested newt in the sample, which is brilliant. And we do something very similar with the soil because we extract the DNA from the soil, and some of that's coming from living organisms, but a lot of it's being left behind, being left in the soil from cells or bits of bodies that have fallen off, and we extract the DNA and we can characterize the communities based upon the DNA that we extract. And it's an amazing technique. One of the beauties of the eDNA or using DNA for identifying communities is before we had this possibility, all of our ideas about what fungi or other organisms that occurred in woodlands or any other system was based upon what came up. So the fruit bodies, the mushrooms, all of our community analyses are based upon fruit bodies. But we don't need to do that with eDNA. We can just extract the DNA directly from the soil and then identify that, and that'll tell us what's there. So it's an amazing step forward.
And for yourself, Richard, how useful has been eDNA for you, and do you use it elsewhere?
It's a technique that maybe heard about perhaps 5 years ago, something like that. And I never thought that we'd be using it like this. And I'm delighted to be working with JHI, looking in such detail at what's happening in the soil. It's just so exciting. And it's creating a whole new perspective on just how complex these ecosystems are. And the final results from the research are going to be really, really fascinating to know how the results of our management, essentially, how effective it's been, and the journey from these plantations of productive coniferous non-native trees through back to a restored woodland on these sites that have been native woodland since at least the middle of the 18th century. It's really exciting to know how successful that process has been.
Yep. And how much further is there to go? So this has been going on about 30 years. These things are not an overnight process. It's a long-term project. So what's the future?
As you say, we're just starting. I think the earliest pause restoration that I know of on the West Coast is the early 1980s, just down the road from Glencruachan. And yes, these sites are in their infancy in terms of recovery. In terms of the area that we have started the restoration process over, probably about half of the area of pause that we have, pause being planted ancient woodland sites, to use that acronym again. About half of the area we've started, but it's a very long-term process.
So that's our time up. I want to thank our guests, Richard Thompson from Forestry and Land Scotland and Dr. Andy Taylor from here at the Hutton. Thank you also to you, the listeners, for joining us. We hope this episode gave you some fungi for thought. Do like and share the podcast, and of course, subscribe to us on your podcast platform of choice. Just search Hutton Highlights Podcast.